What does it take to improve maternal health for everyone? It takes a new model of care for mothers and babies. It takes deeper connections in patients' communities and comprehensive care before pregnancy and far beyond. It takes Philadelphia's only hospital exclusively dedicated to women and families to reinvent maternal health care and improve outcomes for all women. It takes Temple Health.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollandBranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
306 DGS on KMOX. Thanks again to Trish Gazelle for coming by and hanging out. Rach is in Japan. She leaves Sunday in Japan and gets back here on Saturday. Don't ask me how.
Time travel.
It's one for the boys in the truck.
Yeah.
She should be back on Monday, though, unless she's a super jet lagged or something like that. So, Kev, you liked the Hall of Fame lineup this year?
Yeah, it was really. I thought it's a good class. I mean, there's always something that, you know, when you look at the ballot, like, why is this player not getting more attention? What are people not seeing and all of that? But this one was a little bit surprising in one regard. About Ichiro was no surprise. Everybody knew he was going to get in, and one dude didn't vote for him.
Yeah. Do we know who the one is?
No,
because anonymous?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's anonymous unless the voter chooses to put it out there.
Mm.
Most of the modern voters put it out there. I think 80% of the voters from the Baseball Writers Association of America publish their ballot, mm-hmm, and explain it and talk about it, but then there's that 20% that just don't. And we don't know so we don't know why this person left Ichiro off. Did he just want to play the game? Well, you know, nobody else was a first ballot, so or was unanimous, so he won't be either. Or were they trying to, you know, say, ah, oh, he's going to get in anyway, so I'm going to try to get someone else a vote that might be able to stay on the ballot? We have no idea because nobody's stepping forward to explain it. But it's still ludicrous. You don't leave off somebody who should be automatic, right? I mean, there's no argument against him. Just like there was no argument against Derek Jeter. One person did this. I don't know if it's the same person.
Yeah,
but there was one person that didn't vote for Derek Jeter either. And it's like there's zero question about those players. Not one person in the sport is going, you know, maybe we should think about that. Everybody's like, yeah, they're Hall of Famers. Of course they are. And that led to an interesting thing last night, to me anyway. Derek Gould tweeted it out, and I had somebody else tweet at me about something related to it, is, will Albert be the first unanimous position player?
So it's never happened?
Not for a position player. One player is chosen unanimously in the history of the game, and it was Mariano Rivera. He is the only one that got every vote to get in. Not even Ty Cobb, not even Babe Ruth.
Like Gibson,
nobody.
Brock.
Nope. The only person that was a unanimous selection is Mariano Rivera. And it's never happened with it. But see, we have to remember that people are getting smarter. Back in the day, the voters were idiots. They were stupid. They were using personal vendettas. They were, you know, it was bad. It's a lot better now. There are still idiots. There are still people that do dumb things for dumb reasons. You still have the dummies that turn in a blank ballot every year. It's a protest. Like, what are you even, just give it up. What are you even doing? You know, and it might even be that could be the one vote. This guy turned in a blank ballot. Could be that.
Hmm.
But we're curious about the Albert standard because...
How many voters are there? Ish?
It's close to 400. It's like 395. It's something along those lines. But the Albert thing is interesting because as great a case as Ichiro and Derek Jeter had, Albert's case is even greater. I mean, I tweeted this out last night after I saw Derek Gould's tweet about the topic, but I think there's a really, you could make the case that Albert is one of the 10 to 20 best players in the history of the game. So you don't have to be analytically inclined to understand that he's in the top 20 in the WAR category, the wins above replacement, which is kind of a catch-all. And if you don't like that number because you don't like analytics, well, he's fifth all-time in doubles, second in runs batted in. The only player in the history of the game that drove in more runs than Albert was Hank Aaron. And he's fourth in home runs behind Bonds, Ruth, and Aaron. And only one of those guys, and one of those guys did that with steroids. You know, the only other two that did it cleanly. And when you think of like a good catch-all that's not a super analytic number because people don't like that, total bases. It just means singles, doubles, triples, home runs, right? A triple's three, a double's two, a home run's four. How many total bases in your career? The only player with more was Hank Aaron. So, I mean, like, there is legitimately...
And Hank wasn't a...
No, he wasn't unanimous either. No, it's just... it's yes, I know. It's that, it is that idiotic. But Albert also won gold gloves. He was also considered a great base runner. Like, there is no argument against him. He's a world champion, right? He has all of these things that go in there. So will he be the first unanimous one is kind of like the interesting question.
I saw something that was shaded as... Oliver Marmol was shading Contreras on first base. And I read his quote, which just goes to show you have to read the quote. And he was just like, first base is really hard. Everyone thinks that's where you put the fat, slow guy, but it's not true. There's so many moving parts to it, and he'll come along. And the author was like, oh, he's not coming along fast enough. It's going to be a disaster. The guy's going from being a catcher to first base. Give him a second.
Let me tell you something. All right. A lot of that is coach speak. Now, first base is not as easy as you think it is. But it is where they put the big slow guys. It is. That's where they go. If you can hit and you can't play another position, you play first base. Or DH, right? But, I mean, like, that's traditionally. Now, it's changing a little bit compared to what it was, say, 25 years ago. Or 50. Like, Mark McGwire literally could not play anywhere else. Now, he was a pretty good first baseman, too. He was a good defender. But you couldn't put him in right field. You couldn't put him at second base or shortstop. As a guy that, look, I'm always going to go to bat for my catchers. If you can catch, you can play first base. There's nothing at first base that is more complicated than catching. It's a day off for a catcher.
Talk me through that.
Yeah. Well, you just have less responsibility. I mean, when you're the catcher, forgetting pregame meetings and meeting with the pitchers and meeting with the pitching coach and coming up with the game plan and knowing the game plan and implementing the, just take all that out. Just go into the physical side of squatting 170 times and catching something coming at you 90 to 100 miles an hour, 160, 170 times, blocking it when it bounces and throwing out runners. And the catcher is the one directing traffic. So when a ball is hitting the gap, he's the one telling everyone where to go and where to throw the baseball. And he's the one that's directing traffic on a bunt play. He's got a chase. I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but the catcher sprints down the first baseline with the batter when there's a ground ball on the infield and nobody is on second base because they're going to be there. So they're doing that. They're doing all of those things. And not to mention, you know, plays at home plate and all that. And that's not to say that the first baseman doesn't have a difficult responsibility, because they do. It's just like one third of what a catcher has to do. And physically, it's a lot of the same thing, right? Like, are you going to be shy from a ball in the dirt as a first baseman making a scoop when you get hit by them all the time as a catcher? Of course not. So again, I think there will be nuances that he will not be as sharp at because he hasn't done them. But I think on the overall, Wilson Contreras will be fine. And I'm not sure. Let me look at it. He's played first base in the major leagues before. Not a lot. It's like 10, 12 games, something like that. But I'm not worried about the general day-to-day. There will be a play or two or three here and there where you're going to be like, uh-oh.
Is there something about not playing catcher that should make him a better hitter, having less in his mind?
Maybe, because you can spend more of your pregame time focused on hitting and either doing a little extra work or watching video versus being in all the meetings. Because catchers spend a lot of time going over things that other position players don't have to, just because you don't have to deal with pitchers when you're a first baseman or a center fielder. So it can be that. It's more physical. You're just not as tired. I mean, it's by far the most physically taxing position of the position players. It's pretty taxing to be a pitcher. Like, you get tired. Like, your legs get tired. Obviously, your arm's going to get sore as the game goes along. But it's much more the physical side. And also, the idea for him is to try to keep him from getting hurt. You're much more likely to get hurt when you're behind the plate getting foul balls off of you and blocking pitches. Yeah.
And him,
you
know, especially.
Back swings and all that. And when you're as good a hitter as he is, you need the bat in the lineup more than you need the guy behind the plate. Mm-hmm. And just as an example of that, you know, Bryce Harper was a catcher when he was drafted.
Mm.
I mean, he was a catcher who at 17 years old was starting in college. Now, it was junior college because he skipped his senior year of high school to go do that so he could go in the draft. But he was a catcher, but they're like, nah, you're not going to catch because you're too good of a hitter. We don't want the wear and tear. We don't want the injuries. We want you to just go hit. So go play. In that case, it was play the outfield, and now he's playing first base. So, yeah, it's just physically less demanding, and it is definitely less demanding when it comes to prep. You know, now you can spend more of your time on your offensive prep if you want to, but I don't even know that that matters for Contreras because he's been killing it as a hitter since he came to the Cardinals. I mean, you know, outside of the injuries, his numbers have been ridiculous.
Do you think Páez is going to pull ahead of Herrera?
I don't think it's going to be decided when the season starts. I think it's going to be decided based on how they're playing.
Páez has some soft hands.
He's a great catcher. He's got a lot of the Yachty mannerisms,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, he moves like that. Mm-hmm. He's got the body language. You know, he's got a little bit of energy behind the plate. My understanding is he's really good on the game planning stuff and getting in sync with pitchers and things like that. And that's really hard to measure, but it's also really important. But Herrera is also like a difference maker as a hitter, like legitimately good hitter who could like, if he was a full-time DH, he might be worthy of being a major leaguer just to hit.
Hmm.
So you've kind of got this balance that you're trying to strike. And I think the way it's probably going to be is based on what the team needs and how each of them is doing. Right. So if Herrera is killing it, he's probably going to play a lot because that bat is hard to turn down.
So every team, by definition, everyone in the major leagues is a great athlete. Every team has really good athletes who aren't starting. Who are likely to be our top two or three guys that aren't starting who are just really good?
I mean, I think Thomas Ajayi would fall into that. Now, again, some of it depends on whether or not they move Nolan Arenado. But if you're talking at the major league level, let's assume that Arenado's traded. Then that would probably be a guy like Sejacy, who would be a backup, but a backup that plays a lot, that would play second and third and DH a little and maybe learn a little outfield to do all that too. But he'd be that kind of guy. And he's a guy that, you know, in the minors has hit 25 home runs, so he fits the description. Herrera on the days that he would be out would be that.
Any pitchers like Graceffo, any pitchers who you're going to be frustrated if they're not with a big club?
I think McGreevy would be one. If he's not in the opening day rotation, I would be a little bit, I don't want to say frustrated, but a little disappointed because I think it'd be a missed opportunity. This is a youngish guy who's a first round draft pick who doesn't have a lot left to prove in the minor leagues. And you've got a lot of older starters in there now that they're not getting any better. They haven't been very good for a couple of years now, or they've been injured. And if this year is about resetting, then let's reset. Let's have the guy that might be a part of your rotation for the next 3 or 4 years get the opportunity to do it.
All right. Quick break. Right back. DGS and KMOX. 324 DGS. Not to just keep being a dead horse on sports, but what you just said really resonated with me.
Fascinating, huh?
Wheel's been doing it long enough that he was covering CeCe Sabathia when he was a rookie and now going into the Hall of Fame. And what's great about it, now I'm going to sound like the soundtrack to Field of Dreams, but what's great about baseball, all sports, but especially baseball for me, is it's always reinventing and renewing itself.
Yeah.
It's like a field of wildflowers. It just every year there are new ones. And Mason Wynn, we could be watching a future Hall of Famer. And that's what's so fun about it.
Yeah, that's what partly what keeps you coming back too,
yeah.
Is also the mystery of what is it going to be? What is this player going to be? What is this team going to be? It's why I think, you know,
because for every Mason Wynn, you have a few J.D. Drews.
Absolutely. Guys that were super talented. And J.D. Drew had a good career, but he was so hyped when he was young, it felt like a disappointment.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't been that guy, you know, he was the first pick.
We've had a few of those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rasmus.
Yeah, Colby Rasmus was that guy where he was very well hyped. highly ranked prospect, and had a major league career. Like, he was fine. You know, yeah. I think he was around the big leagues for 10 years.
Rick Ankiel ended up bringing it back around.
Obviously, that was a little different reason, but yeah.
Probably one of the best athletes I've ever personally met.
Oh, my God. That's an uncommon athlete. Like, that's a guy that could run, throw, hit. And I think that's the kind of athlete that could have really had success in any sport.
Do you think he would have been better served just to go to the outfield straight from...
At the time, I doubt it, because he was so good at pitching. Like, it wasn't like he was bad all along and they kept putting him up. I mean, he was dominant. He was just blowing people away. That's why he was where he was when he was so young. But then you had, you know, the unfortunate. We all know now. We know better now than we did, say, 50 years ago, how much psychology plays into performance, right? I mean, in the past, you would never, nobody had that. Like, Steve Sachs always had the problem with throwing. From second base to first base, he just had that problem. It's called Steve Sachs disease. And he's not the only guy. Chuck Knoblauch had that same thing. And nobody really understood those things. Those are even more modern ones. There was a pitcher for the Pirates named Steve Blass, who was one of those guys who just lost it, who was really good major league pitcher and just lost it. He turned out to be a great broadcaster. He's been around. It was around baseball for a long time. But that was Steve Blass disease before it was any of these other guys. So we knew loosely that it could happen, but we understand it better now that it's, you know, it's not always related to just baseball or the pressures of baseball. And a lot of times, and if you've heard Rick Ankiel tell his story, sometimes it's stuff outside of the game that just invades what you're doing. It's like all of us, right? I mean, we just understand it better now, where we didn't always understand that in the past.
We need to get who's your boy, the Cardinal, who's now the sports psychologist.
Oh, get Bob Tewksbury.
Yeah, we need to get Tewks on.
I got to find a way to reach out, yeah.
Yeah.
He's so good at that. I mean, A, he's smart, funny, and all of that. And I don't know he was doing he's the mental skills coach for the Red Sox for a long time. I'm not sure if he's still doing that. But, I mean, just fascinating how the brain it works when it comes to this and how... Mm-hmm. You don't even expect. I got a buddy who I coached when he was in high school and coached with after he finished playing. But he finished playing when he was a college player because he was a pitcher who all of a sudden just couldn't throw strikes.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
334 DGS, Dave Glover Show. Why did I say that? I just said Dave Glover Show. sharing some of our successes, like we share our failures, as we do here on the show. What's been going on with NOTA the last 2 days has been nothing short of extraordinary. So Mike Bush featured me on his Making a Difference segment this past Sunday night, and they played it again last night on the news. We went national on MSN front page yesterday, and we work with about 40 volunteers for NOTA, No One Dies Alone, at Bethesda, and we just added 25, and Melissa, who is the trainer, is just up to her ass in alligators trying to figure out how to get all these people onboarded. And then, Dave Murray, get this. We had a hospital group, a series of a bunch of hospitals in Denver, see the story on MSN, and they've reached out to us so that we can train them how to do it. They're going to set up a No One Dies Alone for their entire hospital group in Denver. How cool is that?
Love it. I love it. I told you this like a month ago of what you are doing. I've known you a long time. Consider you a friend. But this puts you over the top in my opinion of what a great person you are.
No.
I mean it.
He didn't think much of you before, but
I was like, on the bubble.
Yeah, the bar was pretty low.
he ain't bad.
Oh, that's pretty good.
He ain't bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have to admit, like the thing with Denver is just like you just don't expect that.
Yeah,
but that's the way things happen. You never know.
Take it nationwide,
never know what's going to happen. So coming out of the deep freeze, looking up a little bit for at least the weekend, maybe?
Yeah, we were above freezing today. We do have another cold front coming by tonight. Could be a couple of snow flurries after midnight. Northwest wind comes back. Tomorrow's one of these changeable skies. A lot of clouds in the morning, maybe a couple of snow flurries. That's about it. More sun during the afternoon, but it's breezy from the northwest. 32 for the high tomorrow. So 2 or 3 or 4 degrees cooler than today. Tomorrow night is the cold night, down to 9 degrees, crystal clear skies. Friday is still a chilly day, but lots of sunshine, 35. Then 24 Friday night. Saturday still is the day, partly sunny skies. It will be cold up until about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, but we're looking at 40, let's say upper 40s, maybe low 50s on Saturday afternoon. Sweet. And Sunday clouds and 40. There are some major signs of a pattern flip trying to develop. There's been this giant high-pressure system over the western United States driving our northwest flow, keeping the west bone dry. It now looks like there's a low pressure that's going to settle across Southern California, bring rain to Southern California over the weekend. When that sets up, we usually get into a southwest flow in the upper atmosphere. And though we're still going to be chilly at night, maybe even cold at night, daytime high should be a little bit better as a trend over the next 10 days or so.
Dave, we don't want to see anyone get hurt, obviously, but as a meteorologist, that has to be pretty cool to see the storms going across the south.
That is spectacular. I remember, this goes way back. My brother used to live in Atlanta, who just had a birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday to my brother Don.
Hey. And he was living in Atlanta, and they had like an ice snowstorm that came across. This goes back a number, a long time ago.
Was this around the Olympics? They had a bad thing around the 96 Olympics thing, too. It really screwed things
they
up.
They did. I don't think it was the Olympics. I think it actually is before that. And the city was paralyzed. They had like 4 trucks to service all of Atlanta as far as salt and sand and plows and that. And so it does happen. Doesn't happen very often. But to see snow along the Gulf of America and into the panhandle of Florida and into Georgia, South Carolina is quite amazing.
Headlines?
Yes. So. So I think I figured it out. So I'm not allowed to do sponsorships, right? It's a union rule thing. And so Rachel has that snappy thing that she can say while she's grabbing her paper.
Schnooks.
She has that snappy Schnook sponsorship.
Want me to read it?
Sure.
You have it?
No.
Oh.
Headlines. I'm not allowed to read it. I don't
have it. Headlines brought to you by Schnooks.
Brought to you by Schnooks.
There you go. Yeah. But she has that to fill
download
that empty
space. Download the Schnooks app.
Today.
Today. So you can app it up at Schnooks.
There you go.
All I have is going, I will do them.
He's like, yes. How long can I shred that one word? Yes.
Many U.S. adults want to beef up security at the border. According to a survey from the Associated Press, Center for Public Affairs, whatever, half of U.S. adults think increasing security at the border should be a high priority for the government. About 3 in 10 say it should be a moderate priority. Just 2 in 10 say a low priority. But on Tuesday, the Trump administration threw out policies limiting arrests of migrants in sensitive places like schools and churches, and majorities, solid majorities of people, like 6, 7 out of 10, oppose arresting migrants at churches, schools, you know, public places or whatever.
Don't you think, though, that the one thing we know with Donald Trump, that we know two things. First of all, in some ways, he says what he means and he means what he says. I mean, he fired off a couple of hundred executive orders, effectuating some of the things that he had been promising slash threatening. But we also know that, much like solving Ukraine within 24 hours and all that, a lot of that goes by the wayside. If they start with convicted felon, bad people, criminal, undocumented immigrants, that's going to take them a while. Like, I think we're halfway through his administration before they even have the choice about, now do we go after sort of normies. Mm-hmm. So I think we're getting our panties in a bunch a little bit early. And also, this isn't a liberal talking point. This is as much of a conservative talking point as it is liberal. If you're going to shut down the border, you're going to have a comprehensive plan. I was watching a show about... I can't remember the name of the town in Texas. It's just like it's basically chicken farms and all these, you know, meat packing plants, and their little town sprung up around it. And it's the most international town in America because everyone there is undocumented. And the people who own it are saying, like, look, we're just telling you, you want to shut down the meat business, do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is my biggest thing is, let's not get beat up by unintended consequences.
Yeah, amen.
I mean, we're all for enforcing the law.
100%.
Not just letting anyone do anything anytime. Like, I think we're all, most people, I shouldn't say all, because there are some people that aren't that way. But I think most of us are like, okay, yeah, we should do things legally. We should make sure that the law is being followed. At the same time, you don't want the cost of chicken to triple. At the same time, you don't want the cost of produce to triple or the cost of houses to triple. Because construction industry comes to a halt because you don't have enough people to do the work. And also, I mean, personally, I would also like to see severe penalties for companies that hire illegal workers. They're getting away with stuff, too. So why are we, I mean, we should be including that. I think that's a good point about the comprehensive plan. Let's do all of it, because then we can try to avoid unintended consequences.
Yeah. Dave, to what degree, I'm going to guess a great degree, does Southern California rely on undocumented workers?
I don't have a good answer for you, but I'm sure it's high. You know, I stay in my little bubble and
yeah.
Because I know that there are a couple different kinds of illegal immigrants, right? There are the people that we see on video, and you can read the stories about, or like what we saw when we watched Sicario, those movies, the people that are essentially just passing across the border. They're being trucked over. They're swimming the river. Like, there's that. And then there are also people that just overstay their visas, who are here initially legally as students to do a job or whatever, and then they just never refile and they stay anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, as a lawyer, that's one thing that I would like to see. I remember back when I used to do a lot of non-contested divorces. There are, of course, legal terms and terms of art that you have to include in it. And pretty much once you do, then it's all, you know, kosher and legal and fine, fine, fine. You don't need to go into any more detail. What I don't like is that the illegal immigrants and those who represent them have just learned the magic words. I want more than magic words. I want a true hearing, and maybe I'm just being completely Pollyannish because there's so many millions of people it'll never happen. But if you want to go from your country to my country because you are being mistreated in your country, I want it to be more than you just know 8 magic words. I want a trier of fact to find out your story and have the balls to say, I'm sorry, Mr. Fill in the Blank, you don't qualify for this status, because not everyone should. Not everyone should. I'm sorry, but not everyone who wants to come to America should be able to come to America the way they want to come to America.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, other countries have similar policies as far as, like, if you wanted to move, I won't name a specific country because I'm not sure I would name one that it's a correct statement about. But there are countries where if you're from the United States of America and you want to move there, you still have to pass their standards. You still have to be able to say, here's what I'll do. I agree to pay this fee or to sign this paperwork or to do whatever. Like, there's still a process in most places.
There's a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah, yeah.
My friend Wheels alluded to this earlier. It took less than 2 days for Elon Musk to have his first big disagreement with Trump after the White House announced a $500 billion AI infrastructure project involving three tech companies called Stargate Project.
That's the new project, yeah.
Yeah. Musk was dismissive about the deal. He claimed that OpenAI, SoftBank, and Oracle, which are the three AI companies involved, don't actually have any money to build this project, posting SoftBank has well under $10 billion secured. I have that on good authority. And he's been very critical of OpenAI in the past, saying that he doesn't trust Sam Altman.
Well, yeah, this is a rivalry thing because Elon wants that money to go to his projects. And keep in mind, this is not government money. So it was held at the White House, and Donald Trump was there to present this idea. But it's not government money or tax money that $500 billion represents. That money is being brought to the table, according to what was announced at the White House, by specifically SoftBank. That's the bank that would be bankrolling, essentially, the process.
Bad name.
Obviously, Oracle is loaded with money, and then OpenAI is Sam Altman. And then
$500 billion is a lot.
Yeah,
of money.
But not right up front. It's not like here's $500 billion. So apparently they're starting at funding $100 billion because what they want to do is build the infrastructure necessary for AI to be a regular part of the U.S. society, which means you need facilities, right? Because you have to cool the computers, right? You need the electricity, you need the power. So they're trying to lay all of that groundwork, and it's going to take years to do that. And then my favorite part of it was that when Elon tweeted about it and said, they don't have that money, I have it on good authority, Sam Altman replied to it, and he said, that's a lie. He said, wrong, as you surely know. Want to come visit the first site already underway? Like, Sam Altman's like, no, we have the money. Now, who knows, you know, what's actually funded now? But that's not, the point is that it's not, here's $500 billion, and we're doing this. Yeah. It's, we're going to raise that amount of money over time. And this is what it really is. This is about the battle with China. So if the money is not coming here, if you're not getting the money for this infrastructure here, there's a chance that these companies and these developers could go to China, and you don't want to lose the AI race against your biggest international rival. So it's mostly about being able to stay ahead or be near the front. It's not like the chase to split the atom, but it's not far off. It's that kind of idea.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All right.
353 DGS. You know, I get a memory unlocked. I've told the story many times that the first concert I ever saw was the Commodores at the Old Glory Amphitheater at Six Flags. Never heard of the Commodores, never seen a concert, just jackassing around like 12 years old or something. And it's a good concert. Blah. And then here come the Commodores, and they're wearing like these mirrored outfits and Lionel Richie. And last night I saw a TikTok of a concert from 1974, which would have been right then. And so it wasn't the concert I saw, but it was like probably the tour. And it just unlocked a memory in me that was really the initial thing that made me want to be an entertainer. Like something about just like I'd never seen a concert. Mm-hmm. Seeing that size of a crowd, probably 2,000-3,000 people, going crazy over these guys in these mirrored outfits and Brick House and Ceylon and... It just really made, and I didn't think I was going to be a Commodore. You know, I had no idea if I had any musical talent whatsoever or comedic or any other kind. I just remember thinking, oh my God, you can make a living doing that? Like, yes, please.
Yep.
And the feeling I had, like I re-experienced, like you had that old dusty synapse back there in your brain, and then it just gets covered with energy. And serotonin and dopamine, and then you're like, oh, holy crap. I remember that. Pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, really cool.